My gosh, I have to follow that, really? That's beautiful, thank you. Standing on the threshold of a warm home and a winter fantasia, dressed in a puffy white coat with fake fur trim around the collar, long underwear poking out from the bottom of her pant leg, and tube socks that chafe against her calf muscles, she is ready for school. Her sister is dressed the same in a winter outfit that would put Ralphie's brother in A Christmas Story to shame. I think some of you get that reference, don't you? This is a story that one of my favorite preachers shared about her childhood. Before going out into the winter cold, she and her sister would be dressed carefully by their mother. And just as they walked out, her mother would call out from behind them, "Now remember to find your greatness today. Remember to find your greatness today." I so love that injunction, to find your greatness. I've thought about putting a note card up in my office in my church that says, "Lucas, remember to find your greatness today." I think it's the antidote to feeling beat down and apathetic. It is saying, go out and care about something deeply today. I can't think of a better message with which to send someone off. Now, I don't mean to, but I might sound a little like a party killer to note that people do not always care. People do not always find that thing that they deeply care about in the world. There is a danger, perhaps it's cultural, perhaps it's more universally human, of losing the ability to name what is important to us, of losing the ability to find what our greatness will be, losing the ability to care. I'm reminded of a story from Charles Swindoll. "Every time I hear the word apathy," he says, "I remember the words of a friend of mine who taught high school just long enough to realize that he shouldn't be teaching high school." He is assigned to teach a course filled to the brim with students who do not want to learn. In fact, it is one of those courses where you have to arrive very early in order to get one of the coveted seats in the back. A couple of students get there so late, however, that they're stuck in the front row. But wherever they sit, they couldn't care less what the subject is. The teacher finally gets fed up with their apathy. He grabs a big piece of chalk and whirls around to the chalkboard and begins to slash away in foot-high letters, APATHY. He underlines it twice, and then he slams an exclamation on it that breaks the chalk. One of the students up front frowns as he struggles to read the word. Unable to pronounce it, he tilts his head to the side and starts spelling it aloud and then mispronounces it again. Then he leans over to his buddy and mutters, "What in the world is apathy?" His friend yawns back with a sigh. "Who cares?" Apathy flourishes where, in a place where the relevance of an idea or a movement or a tradition has drained away. Unitarian Universalism, our liberal religion that stretches back 5 centuries, has sometimes been met with precisely that charge that it is irrelevant. People sometimes heard our message and yawned. The essayist George Temple Strong, writing in 1858, made this charge against the Unitarians. Strong writes of a minister in New York, "He blew well, his lecture was pleasant and instructive, but it is very curious to observe the unpracticality of all sermons, essays, and lectures by these Unitarians when they undertake any practical subject. He goes on, they are sensible, candid, subtle, and original in discussing any social evil or abuse, but somehow they don't get at it and they don't offer any solutions. You feel you've heard or read a very entertaining paper embodying a good deal of deep and clear thought, and then you pause to ask, what is their response? And when you pause in vain. Ouch. That is a harsh verdict for us. And I get it personally. I remember my own struggle to articulate our liberal religion when I was in my first college year. I am sitting in a large green room that smells like old cardboard boxes, ugly yellow plaid chairs, and garish orange plastic tables dot the room, each of which could have been paired nicely with a beehive hairdo and bell bottoms. It seems kind of like a room that fashion forgot, and apparently so did the school. This is a lounge area in the college, and many students come here to study. I am with a small group of 20-somethings quizzing each other on geology terms. As we take a break and stray from the subject of science, one of the other students asks me about the church I go to. What does it believe? She asks. I pause. I try to remember the long and wordy explanation my minister made the previous Sunday. I struggle in vain to remember the UU World articles on the subject. But the clock is ticking and this person is still looking at me expectantly, waiting for an answer. So I end up choking out something about the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism, and her response says it all. An apathetic shrug. My articulation of our religion is botched and irrelevant. I hadn't gotten at it. But what was worse, I didn't feel it. I didn't feel it in my heart. I didn't feel like I had adequately described something that is so very meaningful to me, that has so deeply shaped my life. The verb to believe comes from the Old English verb to belove. It is about what we dedicate our hearts and our minds and our souls to. And in that moment, I can't articulate what it is that I belove, what it is that I dedicate my heart to, and that deeply troubles me. Now, some of you will no doubt be familiar with the call of the former president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, Bill Sinkford. He said that Unitarian Universalists need to create an elevator speech that captures the heart of the matter in a few lines. Now, I used to think that the value of that endeavor was articulating the what of Unitarian Universalism to strangers, and it certainly would have helped me in that instance so long ago in college. But looking back at that experience in particular, at that distress I felt at not being able to articulate what it is that I so loved, I now think differently. I think the value lies more in articulating our faith to ourselves. It is about clearly and directly naming what it is that we belove about this tradition. It's about naming the heart of the matter, why this tradition deserves our commitment and our energy and our money and our time. Let me put it this way. When someone asks you what your faith is, what stops you from shrugging and saying, "Who cares? Who cares?" So I'd like to share with you my response to that question today. This is the reason that I care, and it's what I care about. This is my take on the central theology of liberal religion. One source, many names, no one left behind. One source, many names, no one left behind. Our Unitarian heritage teaches us that there is an essential unity at our source. And this is close to what the word Unitarian originally meant, that there is a oneness behind divine appearances. One of our hymns puts it this way, that we travel from mystery back to the same mystery. I like a passage in particular from the theologian Forrest Church. He says, "Gaze into the light of the heavens. By the latest reckoning, with 100 billion stars in each of 100 billion galaxies and only 6.7 billion people alive here on Earth, there are approximately 1,500 stars to every living person." Contemplate that. The star-to-human ratio is 1,500 to 1. From somewhere in the depths of that cosmic mystery, we humans have emerged and are part of this common, breathtaking experiment of creation. We come from one source. We share a common, holy, astonishing, and beautiful origin. One source, many names, no one left behind. That source, while it has an essential unity, also has many names. There is a plurality of understandings of that source so gratuitous that it may very well rival the stars in their number. And we Unitarian Universalists do not begrudge that plurality. Instead, we beloved it. We honor the multiplicity of stories that speak of that single source, even as we recognize that no single story can exhaust its meaning. The theologian Laurel Schneider tells of an anthropologist who went to live with the Navajo people. And what she was amazed to learn was that in Navajo culture, poverty was not judged as a lack of wealth or by an inferior status. Rather, poverty is a lack of stories. To be poor is to lack the ability to hear and understand and sing the world into being in lots of different ways. I might paraphrase the ancient Vedas here. Our source is one, the wise call it by many names. I agree with that. And I think we need lots of different ways for naming that source and telling its story. We need scientific descriptions that get us close to the cosmic vitality and molecular specificity of our origins. We need poetry that pulls us beyond our narrowly imagined worlds and invites us into transcendence. And we need religious narrative to teach us to see the divine in the wild, prolific forms and faces that make up our world. We need lots of names, lots of stories, lots of songs for how this one source unfurls itself in the world. One source, many names, no one left behind. And finally, we need to know in our bones that no one is excluded from that gracious source of all being. This touches the original meaning of theological universalism, which is the idea that no human being would be abandoned by God and left behind. Our theological ancestors discovered great freedom in that claim. Now, they didn't say, "Hey, we're all saved, so let's go party." Instead, because the Universalists were able to stop worrying about life after death and whether they would get there or not, they found the freedom to focus on life before death. They spearheaded movements for prison reform, women's rights, mental health advocacy, the cause for peace, and that names only a few of the things that they deeply cared about. Their theology freed them to care. One source, many names, no one left behind. I should also add that I say that this is a theology of risk. I state its message in a context that does not agree with its expansive and big heart. There are so many devastating examples in our world right now. There is the withdrawal of protections for transgender students and athletes that has been in the news in recent weeks. And then there is the rhetoric this year that each day offers a new language that strips other people of their humanity and their dignity. Some ethnic groups are called rapists and murderers. Others are threatened with bans based upon their religion. The very idea of a shared humanity, much less a common civic purpose, is an increasingly strained notion on the verge of collapse. And this moment that we are in is heartbreaking, and its rhetoric is toxic. It can be difficult to bear and to even know what to do or to say. And some would say that we, Unitarian Universalists, don't have a response to it, that we don't know what to do or to say either. There are some who think that we don't have any relevant message to offer in this context, that we are unable to articulate the heart of who and what we are and why it matters. So here is my attempt to risk a theology that matters. One source, many names, no one left behind. It's more than an elevator speech for me. It's the statement of what I believe and beloved about this tradition that has given me hope and life, and I know has given so many others hope and life. It is relevant, and it can mend what is broken in this world, because it has in the past, and it continues to do so. It is my way of caring, and if it in any way touches what it is that you care about, then I freely offer it. My fellow Unitarian Universalists, remember to find your greatness today.
Rise, 10:28.
Let's link hands, if that's okay with everybody, or touch someone's shoulder, whatever is comfortable for you. And I leave us today with some words from the poet Adrian Rich. I am moved by all I cannot save. So much in this world has been lost, it's been broken, it's been destroyed. I now know that I have to cast my lot with those who, age after age, perversely and with no extraordinary power, choose to reconstitute the world. May we go forth and do likewise. Amen.